Wolf, get away from those sheep.
Bollocks.
You're listening to the Wolf and the Shepherd podcast, broadcasting from Fort Worth in the great state of Texas. Now, get ready for this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd.
Welcome to this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd. We are finally back from our little break, and I know I came back a little bit early on the break, and it's been a good vacation, but good to have the Wolf back in the studio with us here. Did you enjoy your break, your vacation?
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
My wife made me do a lot of projects around the house.
Okay. You've got to explain to her that it's vacation. You were not supposed to do any work, or like you call it, holiday. I mean, you got to just sit back, relax, not do a bunch of work.
No,
that was the whole point of us taking a break, is so we could relax. And you worked the whole time.
I worked the whole time. I did that and two IT security contracts. So, yeah, I had no break, really.
Okay. Well, are you refreshed? A little bit.
Smaller than that.
Oh. That much? Like nine inches worth?
Yeah, 9 inches.
9 inches worth. Okay, good. Yeah. Well, so glad that we could have Steven come back to the show with the band Left of the Slash, friend of the show, returning guest. Glad he could join us for our kind of triumphant return at full strength. Steven, glad you could join us today.
Well, I'm honored that I'm the first guest after the break. I feel like there's a lot of pressure this way now, and I got to, you know, do my thing.
We have all kinds of faith in you. You can knock this out. Don't worry.
Yeah. It's good to be back, guys. Thanks.
And remember, I've been doing home projects, so even if this is terrible, it's still going to be an uptick. So.
Well, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Now, the last time we spoke, Stephen, I think was back in August, and a lot has happened since then with the end of the pandemic in different parts of the country. We kind of ended it a year earlier, but what's been going on since we last spoke to you? Because that's like 6 months now.
Seven. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like my ability to understand time is gone now. So I don't know if I spoke to you last week or a year ago or 5 years ago. But what's been going on with us? We've been playing live shows. So from August to September, we were getting ready, and then started playing our first show September while we were releasing singles, and then kept playing shows. So we played show at the Mint. We played two shows at the Viper Room. Then I broke my ankle and got ankle surgery from the show at the Viper Room. Then had to take time off. Then played our next show in March. And then we're playing our next show at the Whiskey A Go-Go. And then we're playing our next show on Friday at the Whiskey A Go-Go. So yeah,
kind of ironic you bring up that ankle break, and we honestly we didn't even know about that. We didn't talk about that. You did? Okay, good for you. I did not know that. But some recent news that's happened, and of course when this comes out, this is probably going to be a little bit old news, but over the weekend I heard about Taylor Hawkins, and drummer for the Foo Fighters. I mean, it terrible, terrible news. How did that kind of hit you?
It was really bad. I mean, he's always been, you know, he's one of those guys that you always want to meet in the scene because he's has this aura about him that everyone is kind of, it's like infectious to be around. He's always has a smile on his face. He's always partying. He's always, I don't really know too much about him individually, but, you know, I think it was tough. I was actually away on, you know, vacation with my wife when I got the news, and we were actually in Hawaii, and the time difference was 3 hours behind me. So 5 hours behind you guys. And I got the alert like real late, and I'm like, oh man, like I'm probably one of the first people to know about this. Cause it was like, you know, 4 a.m. your time or something. I was up late, and I was just like sitting there. I'm like, whoa. I'm like, this is a weird one. Cause like I've also been following. So he was in a new act with Dave Navarro and Chris Cheney of Jane's Addiction, Navarro, Hawkins, Cheney. And I was like getting real excited to see them. I wanted to go see them at the Troubadour around here. And I just couldn't get to it. But they were writing new music. They have a bunch of singles out. And he was actually basically the lead singer of the band and did the drums in the studio and would go back and forth. But, you know, it's like you look at a guy like that where he has like his whole kind of life in front of him at 50 years old. And, you know, for the musicians in that circle, that 50 years old is on the younger side, you know, for the guys that are still alive. Right. And then before that was Mark Lanegan, which was like actually really hit me a lot harder than Taylor Hawkins. And it was kind of ironic because in the last year, I've really gotten into a lot more of his stuff. After watching the Alice in Chains induction to the MoPop Hall of Fame in Seattle. And I didn't really know much about Mark Lanegan before that, but, you know, he was just like this mysterious figure that was in Queens of the Stone Age and he was in Screaming Trees and he just was like a part of like this whole scene, Mad Season. And he was kind of like one of those guys that wasn't a Lane Staley and he wasn't like had that, but behind the scenes, he was like much bigger of a deal to a lot of these bands. And then when I started getting into him, I saw that he passed away and I still don't really even know what happened, but it's been a weird year so far already, you know, with those two, you know, passing away. And I don't know, I hope it fucking ends. And I hope we're not entering another year where there's just one after the other kind of falling, but it's bad. You know, the guy I feel the worst for, I mean, besides his wife and kids, Taylor, is Dave Grohl, man. Like, you know, he had to deal with this guy. And I don't know, you know, and I've heard interviews, part of it is like, you'll never get over that, right? But then he's like, you know, top of the world. Like Foo Fighters in a lot of ways are the biggest band in the world, right? I mean, I can't name a bigger current band than them. And I just read before we got on this thing that they just canceled their whole tour. So Dave Grohl, man, I mean, fuck. I don't know how you really recover from what he's going to go through, but I'm sure he'll find a way because he's just such a strong dude. But it's fucked up, you know. You know, obviously some of the details of the scene of what they found in Colombia, and like I'm not drawing any conclusions, and I'm never one to point fingers, but I don't know. It's just it's sad, man. Like it's just it's a bad one.
Yeah, it's always kind of, I guess, surprising to me when people in the media spotlight pass in this type of way. I mean, given the circumstances, there's been a lot of, you know, musicians, actors over the last 10 years who have died in, I guess you can call later ages of their career.
Right.
But it kind of brings up this question to me is why do people use certain things as a coping mechanism when it has a history of very bad results, when you kind of push it over that line? I mean, is it really a coping mechanism that they have to have, or is it just part of the lifestyle that just, you know, when there's no holds barred, there's nobody there to hold your hand and perhaps give you advice, you know, you can do your own thing. I mean, what is it, do you think, that, I don't know, which pushes a lot of musicians, actors to that, yeah, you know, type of lifestyle?
Yeah, so recently after, I don't know, 15 years, I started playing shows again. And I understand why, because when you're on stage and everybody has eyes on you and you're in like a packed room, or even if you're not and you're playing your music, and there's like really no high like that. And the come down from it the next couple of days is pretty fucked up. Like I didn't even realize for a week after the first Viper Room show that I had a torn ligament, a broken bone in my foot, just no idea, walking around with it. And I walked into urgent care and they're like, hey man, like, how are you walking around kind of thing? Like they were like kind of looking at me. And I realized, I'm like, you know, your head's not really on straight. And especially like me, I have another career. I'm a partner in a private equity real estate fund. So for me to like wear those different hats and on a Monday to go back to it, the come down is real, as even if you don't drink or do anything. Right now, I think what's happened to people, I mean, you know, the list is endless, right? We don't have to sit here and list all the musicians that have either killed themselves or or taking their own lives with drugs. I just think that they're always searching for the high, and that makes them feel normal. And you can't replicate the feeling on stage any other way besides drugs. I don't think it, maybe skydiving. I mean, I've never done skydiving, so I don't know. But I'm just like, as far as adrenaline goes, I mean, there's nothing like being on stage. And when you're on stage also, time just goes, it doesn't exist, right? Like, so you'll be playing a 30-minute set and then you're like, it's over. Like, it's just like, it's like, and it's an escape though, right? Because you're there in that 30 minutes of your life. If you had pain before that or whatnot, it doesn't exist because you're just there, right? And I think that's what drugs and alcohol does for you. It numbs the pain. And I think that's really, you know, besides giving you a high, right? But it also takes away whatever. And look, a lot of these musicians, if you really look at a lot of their lyrics and what they're writing about and whatnot, I mean, they've gone through a lot of shit already. So I don't know. I mean, you know, it's really fucking sad. You know, it's one of those ones that you just kind of like get caught out of left field with. And the last one that really, the one that I still never will get over is Chris Cornell. And like that one just caught me so off guard, and it just still, I still never think I'll get over it. But yeah, man, it's just, it's life though. It makes you like want to grab your loved ones around you though, and just be like, hey, like none of the shit that we've ever argued about really fucking matters. This is what matters. And you know, it's just like anything else. You got to just live your life and enjoy every fucking moment, because you don't know when it's going to end.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that you bring that up, and I didn't know at what point in the broadcast here that I was going to bring this up, but I want to read you a couple of snippets from an article, and I want to make sure to give credit to David Neild, who wrote this article, and it was entitled, "Music is just as powerful at improving mental health as exercise." So the kind of the first paragraph here is, "The next time you're not able to get out to the gym, maybe spin some records instead. New research suggests the positive impact on mental health from singing, playing, or listening to music is around the same impact experiences with exercise or weight loss." And I read that article like a couple of days ago, and I screenshotted it into my phone there. I mean, what's your take on that? You kind of alluded a little bit to that. I mean, the playing and the performing of music, and we kind of have taken music out of schools and done that, but isn't that kind of a preaching moment of why music is important and using that versus the drug and alcohol abuse to get that high?
I think that's an amazing quote. I'd love for you to send me that article. I'd love to read the whole thing.
Because absolutely.
I think he nailed it, because look, there's like two sides of me, right? Like, so there's the musician side of me, but then there's the fan side of me, and I'll always be a fan first, right? Like I always grew up seeing music at a very young age, and recently in the last, I don't know, 5-6 years, really since I moved out here and like 4.5 years ago, I would just start studying albums again, right? And when I mean studying, like I have really bad ADD and ADHD. So if I'm listening to music with you, like I can't listen to it like I could listen to it when I'm just walking around with my headphones in, like wherever I am, because I just put my phone on mute, put it in my pocket, and then I'm listening to music, right? But I'm studying the music that every time I listen to it, and I hear something different, right? And then there's certain bands that go through certain phases with, and that kind of morphs a lot of the influences I have with like writing music. But I think that there's nothing like when you're listening to music and you're sober, you're just walking and whatever, and you're just focused on that. It's like, you know, it's the equivalent of reading a book, right? It's the same thing, right? It's not the same thing as watching a movie, because the movie is you doing all the imagination for you, right? And when you're listening to just a record and not like a music video, you're like, what is this guy wearing? What do they look like? What is this? Like who's singing? Who's actually doing what? And it adds some mystery to it. So I really think there's nothing, you know, in that old school way of just like throwing on an album and listening to it from start to finish. The other thing is I'm an album guy. So, and it's been hard to be an album guy in a singles world. And we've had to adjust, 'cause I'm like, okay, I'm just going to release the album. And I'm like, they're like, well, you know, you're just getting started again. You don't have a million followers. No one's going to really care that you're releasing an album. So you got to build off it, release singles. And they were right. And that's why, you know, like now we're getting to the point where we are, but I think that I'm at heart, I'm an album guy. Like I want, when I release our first album, and that'll be the summer, and we can talk about that in a second, I want it to be listened to from start to finish, because I made sure that the songs were in a certain way where you kind of have an up and down. And like, for example, like Pink Floyd's my favorite band of all time. Well, them and Tool right now, I can't really decide. But my point is, if you listen to their albums, right, from start to finish, they're not singles. Like they don't want to be singles. They're just, obviously they've had immense success with their singles, but they would tell you to listen to albums from start to finish, right? And that's how
it tells a story.
Exactly. Because there's highs and lows, and especially like Pink Floyd, where there's so many happy moments, but there's so many dark moments, and then there's the stuff in between. And by the end of it, you go through this emotion. And the best thing to do, and one of my guitar teachers that when I was real young was teaching me this, and I remember I had a pretty rough childhood in a lot of ways. And I'm like, well, what do you do when you're, and I think I was like 11 years old. I'm like, what do you do when you're really depressed or something? He's like, I put on Alice in Chains and I shut the fuck up and I listen to Alice in Chains Dirt or whatever, or self-titled. And I'm like, and then I kind of got it, that's kind of what music does to a lot of people. Right. And I'm one of those people where I'm just moved by music, and I find some music just very boring and bland, and you know, the stuff that's on the radio these days, sometimes it moves me, but sometimes, a lot of times it doesn't, right?
Yeah, I'd actually read with an interview with you that the song Dog from the Pink Floyd album Animals was your favorite song. Yeah. And you know, most people when they think of Pink Floyd think of The Wall, you know, concept album. And I really think you need to be under the influence of something to listen to The Wall, because I think it's a four-dimensional album. You know, there's certain things when your mind is in a certain place, which comes out of that album, which you really don't listen when you listen to it completely, you know, level-headed. But why that song? I know I read through the lyrics, which was in the interview, but why particularly that song?
That's a long answer. So that song, because I just think like, look, like people ask me like, what's your favorite song of all time? And it's always just been Dogs, because like, if you listen to that song, it literally has everything, right? It has the ups and downs. It has the buildup. It has the insane guitar solos. It has Roger Waters and Gilmore singing, you know, it has, you know, the Rick Wright organs. I mean, it has everything. It's just, I think it's a perfect song, and I don't think you could actually write a better song. But also kind of what it represents and you're from England, it kind of represents at that time that there's that the whole album is a concept album, right? So it's based on like the working class people, the dogs, right? The workers, the sheep, who are the you know, just the followers, and then there's the pigs, who are the businessmen, and they're all kind of intertwined living in England, right? Or society. They don't really talk about, oh, maybe they do, of where is it in England, but it's more just in society in general in a vague way, right? And the fact that they kind of like did the Animals like it, and it's only, you know, it's what, five songs, right? The whole album. So that's the other thing, right? It's like, you know, kind of less is more in a lot of ways, where clearly Dogs was not, when they made Dogs, they're like, hey, this isn't going to be on the radio much, right? Because no one's playing fucking 17 minutes songs. I've heard it on the radio like once, and I'm like, whoa, like to really do this.
A DJ needed to go and take a crap.
Exactly. Basically. He beat me to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, he's like, I'm out. I'm going to lunch.
Yeah. He had a bad lunch is probably what it was. He's like, I better put this one on. So my favorite Pink Floyd song of all time is Comfortably Numb. And the only reason that that's my favorite song is because I can play it on the drums perfectly. And I know you as a musician, you're like, yeah, it's a simple song, but I'm not a drummer by trade.
But no ways is that a simple song, just so you know.
Yeah, well, I don't know why I can play it on the drums correctly, but I can. It was just one of those songs that just came to me on the drums easy. But going along the Pink Floyd lines, got to bring up The Wizard of Oz. So what's your take, being a big Pink Floyd fan? If you start that record at the beginning of The Wizard of Oz, does it match up?
Yeah, so I remember doing it once or twice when I was much younger and, you know, probably on some sort of, I don't know what the hell I was on, but it does work. But I think that's kind of, you know, like, I think Pink Floyd gets this stigma about them that they're this drug induced band and you have to use drugs to listen to them. Like, for example, that was, hey, let's take some mushrooms, LSD, pot brownies, whatever the fuck it is. And then they're like, wow, you know, but, and the people that do that are usually the people that are like buying Pink Floyd shirts at Bloomingdale's that don't know anything about them. And actually a funny story. I was out at a bar a couple weeks ago with Aaron and he was talking to a girl wearing a Pink Floyd shirt. And I was like, look, like name five fucking songs or take it off. You know, I'm like, and I'm not hitting on you. This is the opposite of me hitting on you. Right. And it was just, it became one of those things that all of a sudden everyone's selling Pink Floyd shirts and you got 15-year-old boys and girls. I'm not going to be sexist wearing them. And I'm just like, I've had conversations with someone. I'm like, well, why that shirt? Why not a Rolling Stone shirt? She's like, well, we like the name. And I'm like, okay. And I don't really hate on it, but it's like hard sometimes when you're walking and you're just like seeing these people and they just have no idea where it is. You know, the best one I saw was was it Slayer or was it?
Oh, no, I know exactly what you're thinking. It was Slayer. It was the Kardashians. And then the dude from Slayer wore the Kill the Kardashians shirt.
Kill the Kardashians. And I was like, that's it. Because they don't fucking know any Slayer songs. Like, give me a fucking break. You know, like, but that's the world we live in. And, like, you know, the crazy thing is now, and this is weird because recently, like, as we've been releasing singles, they're like, your music sounds a little too classic rock for me. And I'm thinking, I'm like, well, like Sabbath? Like, what do you mean? They're like, no, like Alice in Chains. So now we live in a world that fucking Alice in Chains, Nirvana,
oh, man.
Pearl Jam, Soundgarden is classic rock.
Steven, you just aged all of us right there with that. Well, I mean, you do realize that, right?
I do. And I feel like if I'm going down, you're going down with me. Because I got to pass it on that we live in a world that classic rock is Soundgarden.
Right.
So I mean, just think about that for a second.
Yeah, I've been told before that Nirvana is old school, and I'm like, hold on a moment.
Well, and it's kind of funny you bring up the t-shirt thing, right? So my son, when he was about 5 or 6, we got him a Nirvana shirt, and somebody pulled that on him. I mean, like 5 or 6-year-old kid, and like, oh, can you name a Nirvana song? What's your favorite Nirvana song? And he looked at him dead in the eye and said, Heart-Shaped Box.
Let's go.
And the guy that said it was blown away. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to let my kid wear a Nirvana shirt and not actually listen to the band.
Yeah, I remember actually Pink Floyd was the first English band where I caught on to the politics of what they were saying, or at least it's the first time I noticed it. The first video I saw of theirs was Another Brick in the Wall. And I remember watching it on a TV show in England called Top of the Pops, which was a music roundup of kind of like the Billboard 100 every week. And I remember watching that video and it kind of hit me pretty hard because I think I was only about 8 and I ended up learning to play Another Brick in the Wall on the xylophone. There was just something which resonated with me about that and about the whole English comprehensive school experience, about being indoctrinated by glories of the past and the British Empire.
You're going to have to help me. And actually, Stephen, you might have to help me too. The xylophone?
Yeah.
There's xylophone in that song?
No, I learned to play it on the xylophone in music class in school.
Oh, okay.
Because I couldn't play, well, I didn't think it would sound that good on the recorder, to be honest with you, because when I played Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and Three Blind Mice, that sounds like shit on the recorder, so I figured I'd try it on the xylophone. But
okay, yeah. I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss something, because I didn't.
It was going through my head too. I was like,
yeah. It's like, did you have a different version over there that had a xylophone in it?
Yeah. but why, Stephen, do you think that perhaps Generation Y and Generation Z do attach themselves to what they call kind of old school or classical music to try and be cool? Because I can't think of any bands at the moment who haven't been around for maybe a couple of decades who I would bother perhaps putting a t-shirt on. I'd be, I think, quite embarrassed, maybe because there's a disconnect between me and almost anything written since about 2005, to be honest. But why do you think young people want to associate themselves when really their peer group is listening to the same crap on the radio or whatever it is they are?
It's a really good question. You know, it's one of those things, like, you know, you see like the lips of the Rolling Stone, right? And it's just a cool logo, right? Like, and I think what happened is, and I'm not in the fashion industry at all, but, you know, like I like fashion, right? And whatnot. And I like nice clothes, like here and there. But when you go to a store and you just, there's certain things that just pop out, and someone like some designer was just like, fuck it. Like, let's just put the Rolling Stone and just license it from them. And then they just started flying off the shelves, and Nirvana. I mean, they all have cool logos, right? And I think they also have this element of cool to them, right? Like a Pink Floyd shirt, Rolling Stone, Soundgarden shirt, Nirvana shirt. They're all cool bands, right? In their own way, but they're all like interesting, mysterious, cool. And that's what you want when you're wearing clothes, right? So I don't know if it's much more than that.
Yeah.
Or I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
Or you did get the email, obviously, that it was Black T-shirt Day on the podcast.
Yeah. It's always Black T-shirt Day.
I go from the Smiths song, I wear black on the outside because black is how I feel on the inside.
No.
Yeah. But actually, bringing up the Smiths there, as opposed to asking kids or people wearing these T-shirts, you know, name some songs by them, my question always been, what does that band mean to you? Because I think that's a bit more, you know, you're expecting a bit more of a deep response. Because I can say, you know, what the Smiths meant to me, or, you know, some other bands, and you can pretty much tell if somebody's being authentic, because music, you know, meant something to you at that time. A song was very powerful and meant something to you at that time. But these kids, you know, a lot of these records they're claiming allegiance to were produced, released before they were even born. And I know for the most part, it's not on regular airplay on the type of stations they'll listen to, whether it be on the regular radio or Spotify or something. So,
well, yeah, but almost kind of like he's going to allude to here in a second, probably, I don't think kids listen to the radio anymore. Mm. You know, it's all, you know, streaming.
Well, I mean internet streaming when I say radio.
They get to pick, you know, what they want to listen to, and it's because they see something on social media, right? Mm. Hey, listen to this band, listen to that band, or they hear it from their friends or whatever at school, and it's not like you get in the car and you turn on FM radio and whatever FM radio is playing is what you listen to.
Yeah, and again, going back to the Smiths, I mean, I think that line in Panic, where he says, you know, hang the blessed DJ because the music they constantly play says nothing to me about my life. And I think that's how I felt about music for the last 20 years, pretty much. I mean, it didn't really say much to me anymore. There's this disconnect between what the youth of today, and especially with Generation Z, what they go through. It may as well be Victorian times. You know, it's like, it seems like 400-year gap between what they listen to and what the lyrics are saying and what we listen to in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, look, I look at it like I used to care a lot more what people think, right? And I used to try and instill in some of my friends they're like, this is good music. And they're like, well, I just want to listen to rap. And I love rap music. And I really love so many different genres of music. And I have different friends now that listen to different genres of music. And then I have some friends that listen to everything I listen to. And I kind of have stopped trying to like instill like Soundgarden on, you know, my friends. They either fucking listen to it or they don't. Like, I don't care anymore. But I think a lot of people like myself that like I used to really care what people think and get angry with them that they don't like Pink Floyd or whatnot. And then I don't know, maybe I got a little older. I'm just like, this is a fucking waste of my time. Like, they're going to not like it or they are. But the funny thing is sometimes that I've done for some people is they're like, I don't like Black Sabbath. It's too scary. And then I'll like, just like put on a song without like them knowing who it is. And they're like, this is great. What is this? I'm like, Black Sabbath, bro. And like a lot of bands have these like negative connotations, like they're scary. And yeah, like Black Sabbath is, but at the same way, like they're a melodic band. That's a lot of ways is a progressive rock melodic band. I mean, are they heavy metal? I mean, sure. I mean, they invented it in a lot of ways, but they're a good example of a band that like people are like intimidated by in a lot of ways. Right. And they don't really know. But it's a weird world we live in where the rock scene is kind of, it's going to be interesting what happens, because now that the pandemic is ending for now and live music has been really well received. And in my opinion, the music that does the best live is rock music, right? You know, look, I think some EDM also is really fucking fun to go see. I think rap less so is more fun to go see. I love rap music, but the rap concerts I've been to have been not as good as the best rock and EDM shows. So I think that there's a chance that rock will make a good resurgence through this, because they'll see like guys like Machine Gun Kelly now, right? Like, he's saying, I'm responsible for bringing rock music back. Whatever, fucking go for it, bro. Someone's got to say it. Someone's got to do it. And you know, he's making music with Travis Barker, and people like are now like, oh, well, Travis Barker's cool and he's marrying a Kardashian. And who, you know, it gets to a point where it's like, hey, if people are going to enjoy your music and listen to your music, like, who cares how it happened? You know, no.
I think you kind of alluded to the point really good there, and why rock music, for instance, is one of the best things to listen to live. I mean, I've always considered the more instruments on the stage that are mic'd correctly, or mixed correctly, makes a better live performance. And quite honestly, and this is gonna seem a little weird, but to me, the best music absolutely to listen to live is classical music, because you have an orchestra filled with, hell yeah, you know, 80, 90, 100 instruments that once it's mic'd up perfectly, or in a really good concert hall where it's not even mic'd up, and you sit there and you listen to that, it's amazing. But unfortunately, you can't really capture it on recording. Nobody's really came up with the absolute best method. Even if you watch it on TV and you're seeing the people playing all the instruments, whatever, we can't just seem to capture that live performance correctly with all the technology that we have right now. Are we ever going to get there, or is it always going to be live music is the best way to listen to music?
It's a complicated question, because live music isn't just listening to music, and it's an experience. It's an event, right? It's an escape. Like, you go to a rock show and you've had a shitty week, shitty month, shitty day, and you go see a good show and you don't know what the fuck you were even worried about. And that's what I love about music, right? No matter what music it is, it's that kind of like natural euphoric high that emanates from like what's going on stage. And that's why personally, when I always go out there, I just make sure that I fucking do everything I can to, you know, to leave it all out there. And, you know, I got to jump less on my left foot and not, you know, have more ankle surgery, but you get my fucking gist. And I'll send you the link so you can watch me break my ankle. It's on Instagram.
Yeah.
I think this is it on YouTube also.
I could put it up if you want. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, I think there's something very different between a recorded voice and a live voice, because it doesn't matter how good the recording is. If somebody played that voice behind you, you're never convinced fully that that person is in the room. You can still tell it's a recorded voice. And I think with, you know, you were talking about orchestras, there's something about that string sound going through natural air. And when it hits your tympanic membrane, it's an experience which you can't replicate. It doesn't matter how high the quality, you know, through the highest digital recording or even on vinyl. I mean, you can get close to it on vinyl.
Vinyl is the closest I've been able to to experience.
I think that's because a lot of vinyl recordings, they didn't use normalization. So you really heard the peaks and troughs. Yet with digitized music, especially when MP3s came out, they wanted to normalize it so people could maintain it at the same volume.
It's a compressed file, you know?
So I think that's where it's kind of suffered. I mean, a lot of live recordings now don't sound anything like the live recordings we used to listen to back in, you know, like the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, because they were kept raw. I feel now a lot of live records are still overproduced. You know, they still want you to have a little bit of a studio feel with a familiar song and maybe a little bit of a live type feel, but I still think a lot of record companies don't think the commercial angle of live records really has that much of an audience, you know?
No, I can see that. I mean, there are some bands, like I'm sure you'd probably say like Pink Floyd or you know, it list a bunch of really good live bands. You're just never going to capture that. And I love that fact that you talk about. It's not just the listening, it's seeing everything, right? It's the experience, it's the smell of the place, the way it appears on stage, you know, the way the bass feels when it kind of shakes you and makes the hairs on your arm stand up, things like that. You're never going to get that, you know, out of a recording. But kind of alluding to you in recording your, you know, album that's coming out, you talk about putting it on things like Spotify, right? And you release it a track and a time or whatever. Are you thinking about going ahead and putting all that together on an album and maybe doing some kind of a vinyl release?
Yeah. So we've gotten a couple of offers for vinyl releases and maybe, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's not, just being honestly, it's not really profitable, right? I mean, you know, and we're not at a stage, we're not at the stage right now where we have, you know, so many fans that would have like a waiting list, like if like Tool released a vinyl, for example, right? I mean, you know, so eventually, yes. You know, it's funny, I'm more of a, my ADD and ADHD is more, it's good for the digital world that we live in. Cause I'll literally go from, you know, mostly it's album to album, but like, I just like being on the go wherever I am and just having everything on there. And one day I'm going to build an album collection. But I hear you. I mean, it's tough, you know, to replicate that.
Yeah, no. And kind of going into the name of the band, Left of the Slash. And of course your logo, I mean, it screams like gas gauge, right? And now with gas prices up, I mean, you almost got to think maybe people are finding you a little bit easier because, like, yeah, that's what my gas tank looks like right now because gas prices are crazy, right? So let's talk a little bit. I know we alluded to this in the last podcast, but let's talk about the name Left of the Slash.
Yeah. Well, I will say that I've transitioned to an electric car. I'm a Californian with an electric guitar. Electric car. So I'm a little insulated from the gas gauge, except for Left of the Slash, and I don't miss that. But what I will say is, so the band name was, it was from a Seinfeld episode. I think I told you last time when Kramer is he has the rental car and he's seeing how far he could go left of the slash before the car dies. And I always thought, when I was young, I'm like, well, that's a really cool concept because you could take that and then apply it to, you know, perseverance. And when you look at your gas gauge and you think that you have nothing left and you're going to die, like your car's going to die, you could keep going. And when you keep going and you think that there's nothing left, there is still more life to go and you still have more of a chance. So that's kind of what Left of the Slash means. It's kind of a play on perseverance and life and, you know, struggling, fighting, that kind of thing, and kind of tries to tie the, you know, the lyrics and the rest of like the vibe of what we're doing to that. And it's been cool. And I think the logo came out great. It kind of represents, it looks good on a lot of different things. We actually just got the drum head in today. So I'm looking forward to getting that on the drum kit on Friday. I'm hoping Alex doesn't just fucking break it the first time because he's a madman. And but
see, you should have got two just in case.
Yeah, there's some dude in Ohio, our bass player, Sabrina, she got it for one of her other bands. So it's like, you know, they're cheap these days. I mean, that's one of the good things about the world we live in.
Now, how are you feeling about, you know, the new album coming out? Because I know you played it live in full at the Viper Room kind of mid-December. Mm-hmm. And this album's taken almost 20 years to kind of come to fruition. Are you going to feel a certain sort of exorcism when it's released, that, and a weight off of your shoulders that's kind of out there now?
Yeah, for sure. And I've been – part of the reason I've been hesitant to release you yet is, well, A, we're in – final talks with the label right now. I can't really talk about too much of it right now. But it's looking like that over the summer, we'll release it with the label and with some pretty big backing. And I'm glad I did wait. It's been hard to wait. And I've also wanted to release that before I started going into the studio for the next album, because I know once I do that, I'm not going to be able to stop recording. And right now I'm just focused on playing, you know, that music live right now. And it's a lot, it's 10 songs. And we only played that album once live. And we'll do it again, but it was an experience for sure. Like the last song with Patience Along, that was the first time it was ever played live by anyone. I mean, unless I copied it from someone that's been out there, which I don't think is possible. But it's been fun. I mean, it's just been a lot of fucking fun. And I'm playing with musicians, Mike Kindle on guitar, Sabrina Winter on bass, Alex Rivas on drums. And these people are just by far and away the most talented people I've ever played with. And we're just having so much fun with it that it just comes natural for them. And for me, it's, you know, quasi-natural, but it's at the same time, it's like, you know, it's just fun playing with people that are just so fucking good.
What's the significance of the album title, One, W-O-N?
Yeah, so it's a concept that I'm going to do. I don't want to say too much, but there's a sequence of albums that will start with One. And One is a play on word, is W-O-N, like I won, or number one. So I thought it was cool for the first album for One to be One, right? Or One to be first. That didn't really make much sense, but you get what I'm saying. So yes, so it's gonna, the album will follow, and the second album will have something that has something to do with the first, and just trying to have fun with it. I don't know. I try not to take what I do too seriously. But yet I take it very seriously. So I don't know.
Yeah. I was listening to a track the other day, actually, the Two Minds, One Head. And I'd actually watched 12 Monkeys the night before. And okay. Your song, you know, Two Minds, One Head is about, you know, dissociative identity disorder or multiple personality disorder.
Yeah.
And about the divergence of two minds and having to live with having that duality in your head. Was that from personal experience? Because it's quite a touchy subject, if it is, mental health.
Yeah, definitely. So I kind of have two different personalities, and there's always been the business aspect of me and the creative aspect of me. And I have been more successful on the business aspect because I probably put more of my real, my real life meaning when I was older to focus on it. Right. And it was something that I always had to live with, knowing that I had two different personalities inside of me. One of those personalities never got along with certain people, and the other one didn't get along with certain people. And very few would there be like a, you know, a middle ground for that. And eventually I just kind of like accepted the fact that this is the way it's going to be. And I'm never, this is who I am. And I thought it was a cool, like, you know, kind of a psychedelic way of just being like accepting who you are. Right. And not trying to be something that you're not. Cause at the end of the day, like, you are who you are, and you could do everything you can to change it, but you're really going to be who you are. And yeah, can people change? Sure. But I think that the stuff that's really embedded in you is going to be there no matter what you do. And accepting that is a better way of advancing than trying to just fight that part of you. Unless that part of you is a fucking serial killer, and then you should try everything you can to not be a serial killer.
I don't know. There's probably some pretty good places we could place a serial killer right now.
Mm, yeah. Well, specific assassin as opposed to serial killer, isn't it? We want.
What's the difference?
Well, a serial killer kills lots of people, and it's normally a longer theme, such as like people born in November or so. I don't know if you remember the Zodiac Killer or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, for hire assassin, just as individual jobs, and there's no particular demographic they're aiming for. It's just paid for. Yeah, I think the serial killer kind of enjoys it a little bit, whereas the assassin is just a job.
But maybe he enjoys it. You know,
he might.
If you actually like what you're doing, it's not really a job.
That's true. Yeah, even if you're a serial killer.
Yeah, there you go. A paid serial killer.
Paid as well.
That's professional.
Yeah, never working a day in his life.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Well, Steve, glad you could join us today. Can you let everybody know how to find out more about the band, how to find out more about you, tour dates, all that good stuff? Give us kind of the lowdown of all that.
Yeah, sure. So we're playing this Friday, which is April 1st at the Whiskey A Go-Go, 9 o'clock. And then I'm actually going to do something different, where myself and Alex, the drummer, I'm going to do a stripped down version of not Alice in Chains, she's of Left of the Slash. well, I really gave it away there, just like Alice in Chains did. And it's going to be acoustic, me singing and drums. And we're playing the Federal NoHo April 15th. And then we're playing the Mint May 10th. And then I'm going to take a nap after that. Or I'll try. I've never taken a nap before, but I hear they're cool.
Mm, nice. Well, hey, once again, thanks for joining us. We're going to have all that information in the show notes and everything. If you're watching this on YouTube, please click our little button down there and subscribe to our channel. It does help us out. Check out Left of the Slash if you're in California. And one of these days, you're going to bring your band to Texas, right?
We'll be at South by Southwest next year. This year, it was the timing just didn't work out. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Hey, we might actually have to hop in the car and go to Austin then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, absolutely. Well, cool. Yeah. Thanks, Steven. Glad you could join us today. And that will do it for this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. And we will catch you on the next one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd podcast. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, thewolfandtheshepherd.com, to your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a positive review on iTunes when you get a chance. Check us out on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for additional content. Join us next time for another episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd.